Okay, what we're going to learn today is the second part, so to speak, of this very brief summary of Tanya, of the main basics of Chassidus. Basically, we left the last class with what's a Beinoni? What's this guy, this intermediate guy? It's a person that, so to speak, has a battle, but on thought, speech, and action. Not a battle on feelings, not a battle of understanding. Of course, we have to sit and learn Torah, and we have to understand godliness and so on, Judaism. But the main battlefield, so to speak, for this guy is thought, speech, and action. What do you think about, so to speak, what you do? Do you dedicate your mind to? And what you talk about and what you do? And the tzaddikim, the righteous people, okay, they control their heart, they control what they feel, they are completely, infinitely higher level. Very nice, claps and be happy. That's not me. And I was not created for that. The Alter Rebbe makes it so clear, and it's so powerful, because a person might think, I'm not like the Rebbe, I'm not like the Rambam, I'm not like Rashi, so I'm nothing. Wait a second, you're making a big mistake. You are not supposed to be that. Nobody asked you to do that. There's a very small story which illustrates this point very clearly. Rav Zusha Anipoili. Rav Zusha Anipoili. Anipoili is a city in Poland. He was a colleague of the Alter Rebbe. He learned together with the Alter Rebbe by the Magid of Mezrich. And he used to say like this: when I go up in heavens, you know, after 120 years, they're not going to ask me why I wasn't like Moshe Rabbeinu, why I wasn't like the Rambam, and so on. They're going to ask me, why weren't you like Zusha? Why weren't you yourself? Each one of us has a tremendous potential inside of us. And most of the times, don't say it so loudly, but most of the times, we just don't realize that potential. We don't use it. We don't use it. So we're supposed to be using our potential, and we're not. We don't have to be sad that we don't have the neighbor's potential. You are you, and the neighbor is your neighbor. There's no connection in the sense of what you have to accomplish in your life. You have to accomplish whatever you can accomplish. That's your mission. And the rest, each one has to do their own things. So that's basically the Beinoni. One of the main points in this guy, Beinoni, is that he tries with his mind to control exactly what we just spoke about, thought, speech, and action. Not necessarily emotions. He tries to do his best with emotions and so on. That's the main, very important thing in the Beinoni. Moreover, there's a thing, there's an idea, a theme, whatever, in Judaism called Avoida. Avoida means to work. That's the literal translation. But the word Avoida comes from a very specific activity. They used to tan the skins of the animals in order to make parchment, in order to make shoes or whatever they wanted to make. Leather. So this process of tanning the skins and processing the skins is called avoida also. It's called work. And there's a expression in the Torah called oires avudim, skin that has been worked on. In the process of taking a skin of an animal and making actually leather takes a lot of chemicals, a lot of bad smells, and it's a terrible work. So that means that avoida on ourselves, our work with our own qualities and so on, has to be a hard work. If it's not hard, it's not called work. That's the definition of work. Work means hard thing. Again, not that you're working because you want to make money and so on. You have to also do that. But here we're talking about personal development. You have to work on yourself to the point that you feel the working hard. No effort, no gain. That's the game, so to speak, quote unquote, in Judaism. So this Beinoni could be that by nature he's a learner, he sits and learns. By nature, he doesn't feel such a heat for the society, for the stupid things in the world. I got the last iPhone and I have the last thing. And by nature, he's like that. So don't think that's a avoida. Don't think that you're actually working. The only time you're working is when you go beyond your own nature. In modern terms, so to speak, when you leave your comfort zone, that's when you're actually working on yourself. If you never leave your comfort zone, you're not working. That's not called avoida. That's a very important, fundamental thing in Beinonim. There's another idea that could happen to the Beinoni, this regular intermediate guy that everybody can actually reach this level, that it might happen that he doesn't really feel anything. He doesn't feel love for God. He doesn't really feel fear for God. He understands that he has to actually feel it, because he understands the greatness of godliness. He contemplates in the world and meditates and so on. And he tries his best, but because his soul comes from a very specific place, whatever, his spiritual thing, doesn't really matter what it means. It's called ibur. It's called when a woman is pregnant, the fetus is inside of her belly. So you don't see what's inside her, so to speak. And when it's born, of course, now you see. So there are souls that come from a specific level that is called level of pregnancy. Not that God is pregnant. Don't misunderstand. What it means is that it's a level that is hidden in such a way that a person understands but still cannot develop love for God. So the Alter Rebbe says, don't worry. Don't get depressed again. The point over here is that as at least you understand the greatness of God, because you think about it and you contemplate and so on, that's already good enough in order to develop yourself, in order to grow within yourself. Even if you don't feel it, at least you understand it. You understand you should be feeling. That's already called some sort of feeling. Then the Alter Rebbe goes into a completely, so to speak, different path. We spoke in the last class, there are two paths. There's a long one and short one. There's a short one and a long one. So up to here, basically, we learned what the long and short path is. It's a long path because it's a very difficult thing to develop feelings, develop fear for God, love for God within the heart by meditation, through meditation, and so on. It's a long path, but it's short. Why is it short? Because it's mind. Whatever you develop, you really feel it. Really feel it. But there are situations in which a person cannot really develop this for many, many reasons. So the Alter Rebbe says, you know what? There's a short path. It doesn't mean a shortcut. It's a short path. But you should know, even though it's a short path that I'm going to describe in a second, but at the same time, it's a long path. Why? Because it's not yours. What you actually have inside of you, the feeling you have, is not really yours. It came from, as inheritance, from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What does that mean? What's the short path? The short path is the following. Each person, by the way they were created by God, has inside of them a very strong desire to connect to godliness. Very, very deep inside of us, this desire is over there. And we received this as an inheritance from Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Avraham loved God, and God gave him a gift. What was the gift that God gave Avraham? You're going to pass on generation after generation to your children, descendants, and so on, love for God. It's over there. It's there. Sometimes we don't feel it. Okay, but it's there. When do we actually feel it? When we come to a situation in which we have a proof of faith, so to speak. Either you do this or I kill you, like in the times of the Holocaust and so on. In those moments, in those situations, this love for God emerges. There's a story, very powerful story, I'll make it short, told by Elie Wiesel. Elie Wiesel was a person that passed through the Holocaust, and he was very close to the Rebbe, and he very interesting guy. He wrote books. So Elie Wiesel relates a story that he heard from the person that actually this story happened to. The story is like this. There was a row of people, you know, the Nazis, they killed Jews, they had a sport of killing and so on. So there was a row of people, the Nazi was killing in one, each one, pom, 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 until he came to the last guy in the row, and he told him like this: either you bow to me and you recognize I'm God, or I kill you. You see, your life is in my hands. I don't remember the whole description that Elie Wiesel makes of the story. It's very interesting. He wrote very well. And this guy did not bow. Yeah, I'm killing him. Scream goes, and this and that, boom. The Nazi kills this guy. And the story is that the son of this guy was watching how his father was being killed. And the son of this guy told Elie Wiesel, I never understood why my father didn't bow down. Because my father did not believe in God at all. Never. But that's the story. And Elie Wiesel wrote this in a book called, I think, I'm a Jew or something like that. So what is this story actually illustrates? The story tells us that even a person that the whole life was a negator of godliness, there's no such a thing as Judaism or godliness, don't bother me, I don't care about this. But you know what? In the most critical moment of life, this emerges, this comes up. And you say, after all, I'm a Jew. I'm not bowing down to you. You're not God. So this is what the Alter Rebbe calls hidden love within a person. I have a message, that's in Hebrew. Hidden love within a person, love for God. And we have to learn to let this grow and emerge and sprout out and so on. Even not in terrible situations. Don't expect to be in a terrible situation in order to remember that you're a Jew. No, no. But it is inside of us. It is. And we have to understand, we have to know that the Rebbe makes this very clear throughout different number of chapters, that every single mitzvah, every single instruction that God gives us, each one of those is actually fundamental. There's no such a thing as important mitzvahs or not important mitzvahs. Important commandments, not important commandments. Why? Very simple. Because the word mitzvah in Hebrew, commandment, we actually translate this as commandment, has also another meaning. The meaning of connection. Tzavta in Aramaic, in Hebrew, means a tzevet, a group of people, a connected group of people. So mitzvah means connection. So when we actually fulfill a mitzvah, we're connecting to God. And the very deep desire of every single person is, I do not want to be disconnected from God. I want to be connected. And therefore, when a person realizes that he's going to get disconnected because you're not fulfilling God's will, because you're doing something God doesn't want from you and so on, when a person feels this, when a person realizes, even if it's not a feeling in the heart, it's at least you realize it in your mind, automatically the person is going to say, no, I'm not going to do this. Why not? You always do it. Because if I do this, I'm going to get disconnected. The catch over here, the very interesting point that the Rebbe makes is, it doesn't really matter which kind of mitzvah it is. A person can say, I'm not going to kill, you know, killing, murdering, it's not my, I'm a regular, normal guy, I don't kill people. I'm not going to steal, stealing, I work hard, I'm not going to steal. Whatever I have is because God gave me, and so on. So a person says, yeah, that's important. But going to pray to shul, going to, I don't know, putting mitzvah, putting tefillin every day, putting a mezuzah in the door, who says it's such an important thing? Don't bother me. There are more important things in life. I give tzedakah, I give a lot of charity, and I'm very, I don't have mezuzah in my door. Wait a second. Don't forget that every single mitzvah, it's a channel to connect to God. And it doesn't really matter what kind of mitzvah it is. It doesn't really matter the importance it has. It doesn't really matter what you understand of this mitzvah. They're all the same. In this aspect of connection, they're all the same. Do you want to be disconnected from God? No. Okay? So do this mitzvah. Or don't do that thing that God doesn't want you to do. But with this, the Alter Rebbe explains what the short path is. The short path is always realize that all the mitzvahs are fundamental channels of connection to godliness. And the truth is, interestingly, Alter Rebbe doesn't bring it in this point in time, it brings it later. There's an interesting phrase by our sages. Our sages say, schar mitzvah mitzvah, in Pirkei Avos, in the ethics of our fathers. Schar mitzvah mitzvah, the reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah. The reward for fulfilling a commandment is a commandment. What does that mean? Most of the commentators explain that is very simple. When you fulfill one commandment, God is going to give you the opportunity to fulfill another one. Oh, so you see, the reward for one commandment is the opportunity to do it another one, to do another one. Very nice. But Alter Rebbe explains in a much deeper way. Schar mitzvah, you know what the reward of a mitzvah is? Mitzvah, the connection. The schar, the reward for fulfilling a commandment is your connection to God. That's the most fulfilling, so to speak, thing a person might have in life. You can have a lot of money, you can have not a lot of money, God forbid. You can have all kinds of things and not have all kinds of things. The connection to God That's the most important thing in life, because that's the only thing that is going to make you, again, leave your comfort zone and really grow. Really grow. In Hasidic thought, is explained in many places that there are four types of creatures. Actually, the Rambam talks about this also. The Talmud talks about this also. There's earth, you know, earth, water, air, and what am I missing? Fire. Okay. Four kinds of creatures. And four kinds, each one of those creatures corresponds actually to a type of being in earth. You have inanimate objects like stones, you have plants, vegetable world, you have animals, and you have human beings. Human beings are not better animals. We don't believe in evolution at all. God created us in this way. And because we find common places with animals, like in the brain and in the heart and this and that, okay, God, that's the way God created us. Not that it evolved on millions of years. No. We don't believe in it. But whatever, having said that, we're not better animals. We're human beings, completely different type of creature. The fulfillment of an inanimate object like a mineral is when it gets included into a plant. The plant absorbs from the ground minerals, water, and so on, and now this mineral became plant. It grew into an infinitely higher type of being, because a stone doesn't grow and a plant grows. Now, the fulfillment of a plant is when the animal, suppose a cow, goes into the field and eats the plant. Oh, now this vegetable became animal. The animal at least moves from here to there. The plant doesn't move. Okay. The fulfillment of an animal is when a human being eats the animal. Now the animal became human being. But what's the fulfillment of a human being? How do you actually grow? What's on top of you? God. That's the only thing on top of you. What does that mean? When a person gets connected to God, that's the real growth. That's the real fulfillment of a human being. Having said all of this, it doesn't matter, again, which kind of mitzvah it is. The point is the connection. Which kind of commandment it is? What do I have to do? The point is to fulfill God's will. That's going to connect you to your actually fulfillment. Now, this would be, so to speak, the first part of Tanya, which is, again, the long and short way and the short and long way. From chapter 26 on, the Alter Rebbe gives all kinds of interesting counsels to the Beinoni, to this guy, in order to be able to cope with life. After we defined what a Beinoni is, what the soul is, the garments of the soul, how there's a conflict inside of us, and what's a tzaddik, what's a Beinoni, what's a rasha, a righteous person, an intermediate person, a person, a wicked person, and we understood the short path, you have it inside of you, you don't have to create love for God, it's inside of you. The Alter Rebbe says, okay, but life, sometimes, it's hard. And therefore, we have to understand what does Hasidus have for us for this life, which is hard. The first thing that the Alter Rebbe says is, you have to know that your attitude is going to define basically the outcome. And he gives an example, very simple example. When there are two people fighting, and one of them is stronger than the other one, you know, one of them has a tremendous arm and the other one is such and such a thing, whatever. However, if one of them is depressed, sad, even if he's stronger than the other one, he's going to lose the battle. He's going to lose. The one that is happy, the one that is diligent, the one that is enthusiastic and so on, he's going to win the battle. But, so attitude is everything. But sometimes life is hard, as we said before. People suffer, lots of things. Some suffer because they don't have money. Some suffer because they don't have health, and so on. But whatever kind of suffering it is. The Rebbe explains, you should not be sad because of sufferings. Because the truth is that the verse, Es Hashem Yehav Hashem Yehiyach, that person that God loves, he actually reprimands that person, sends sufferings to that person. For many reasons, the Talmud talks about this. Sometimes sufferings, they wash, so to speak, they clean our sins. Sometimes sufferings is actually God imposing on us in this world something that we would suffer much more in the next world. So better to suffer in this world, so you're not going to suffer in the next world. There are many explanations to sufferings. But the main point over here is that what Alter Rebbe is saying is this suffering comes from such a very high level of love from God that it cannot be expressed in this world as a nice thing. It gets expressed in a terrible thing as a suffering. And a very simple example for this is it's just an example, with the baby or a boy, whatever, a girl, putting some metal inside the electrical, appliances over there in the wall. So he's putting in the wall some kind of metal. And the father says this, sees this, and he screams, "No, don't put anything, you're going to die." And sometimes you just take out the hand from the boy, "Don't do this, never do this." And you scream and you're scared, and the boy is scared and he starts crying. What happened over here? "Hey, take it easy. Why don't you talk to your son?" "Excuse me, my dear son. You should know that electricity is a very dangerous thing. So if you put something over there, the contact of the metal with the electricity, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you do that?" "No, you don't get it. You have to act quick, fast. The guy's going to die. So you have to act very quick and very fast." But that's expressed as a very hard thing. Screams and fears. But the truth is that behind the screams and behind the fear is a tremendous love of this father for his son. Amazing love, infinite love. You don't want him to die. So you scream and do whatever. So we see that there are things that are actually love, but get expressed as a very hard thing. So those are the sufferings, says Alter Rebbe, in this world. And then the Alter Rebbe says, there are other reasons why a person might be sad. So don't be, again, by sufferings, don't be sad, because God is showing you his very profound love that cannot be expressed in this world as revealed love. Let's call it like that. Then the Alter Rebbe goes into understanding a different reason why a person might be sad. Because you work, and you work on yourself, and as we described before, you really work hard on yourself, but you don't see real advancement in your life. You don't see that you became a tzaddik. You don't see that you actually control everything in your life. And it's hard, it's hard work. And you get very sad, either because you have many sins on yourself, and you say, I'm never going to do tshuva for these sins. It's so difficult to repent. Or, again, because you work and you work very hard, and you, from time to time, you see your yetzer hara, your evil inclination goes, takes you, and actually controls you. You think you work, and you think you actually finish the work with it, and suddenly, whatever, you're walking in the street, and you see a girl, and then, whoa, what are you doing? What are you looking at? You're not supposed to do that. "Oy vey, I just came from a class in the synagogue. I just learned 3 pages of Talmud in deep ways and Tosfos and Rashi. And I'm looking for the girls in the street. What am I doing? All my learning is nothing. I didn't accomplish anything. I didn't change myself. I'm just I understand intellectual things. Yeah, the Talmud says this and that. Did you change yourself? No. Oy vey, me." So a person might get depressed. And the Alter Rebbe has a very interesting idea. He says like this: you should know that every opportunity you have to not to transgress, to walk in the street and not to look at these girls, it's just an example, where you shouldn't be looking and so on, every opportunity you have, you're fulfilling a mitzvah. You're actually doing a mitzvah, a commandment. What's the commandment? We say every day, do not deviate after your heart and your eyes that you deviate after them. And the Alter Rebbe asks a very simple question. Who is this verse talking about? A tzaddik? A righteous person? He doesn't deviate. Never. He's a tzaddik. That's why he's a righteous person. He doesn't deviate. This verse is talking about a beinoni, a person that might deviate, and the Torah says, don't do it. So every single time you actually deviate in this example that I gave, the sight, you don't see what you don't have to see, you don't listen to what you don't have to listen, You don't say what you don't have to say, and you know it, but it sounds so nice and so funny. Yeah, but somebody's suffering. Yeah, but it was such a nice joke. You know, this guy came and I said like this and that. There was one guy that wasn't joking, you know? He wasn't actually laughing. Everybody was laughing, but this guy was suffering. So don't say it. Every single time you avoid doing, talking, or even thinking about something you don't have to think, or looking and so on and listening, every single time you're fulfilling a mitzvah. You're actually working on your evil inclination and connecting to God. So why should be sad? You shouldn't be sad. Then the Rebbe says, every single bad thought, sometimes people are sad, depressed, because they have very bad thoughts. You know, the bad thoughts, you have to just push them away with two hands. That's what the Rebbe says. Push them away with two hands from your mind. And the way of doing this is, in other places, the Chassidus is explained that we can stop doing, like don't act, don't do anymore. You can stop talking, just shut up, you're not going to talk, but you cannot stop thinking. The thought in Chassidus is compared to a river. River that flows and flows, water very strong, all the time flowing. You can't stop that river. But what you can do is, you can change your thought. Once you realize that you're thinking something and it's not proper, for whatever reason, just change it for something else. The problem is, when a person has an empty head, so to speak. What does it mean, empty head? When you don't have memorized, even if it's not perfect, doesn't really matter. But ideas in Torah, verses in Torah, you have to have them memorized in your head. It doesn't really matter if it's just one. It's just you can repeat this one all the time. It doesn't really matter. You're still learning Torah, even if it's repetition. When you don't have thoughts in your head, so you don't have what to change this thought, this bad thought with. What can I put in my head instead of this bad thought? So a person has to be very careful to have ideas of Torah or verses and so on, Tehillim, Psalms, memorized in the head, in order to, immediately as you realize you're actually contemplating something very evil, very bad, change it. Stop thinking about that and start thinking about something else. You're not going to be able to stop thinking at all, unless you die, chas v'shalom, God forbid, but change it. Think about something else. And reject completely this bad thought. Then the Alter Rebbe talks about a very interesting thing, humility. Humility. That's another reason why a person might be depressed, because you think you're higher than, and you're better than, and the other guy is not doing what he has to do, and why do I have to work so hard, and this guy doesn't work so hard, and so on, and I see him sinning, why do I have to be careful with this and that? I see all kinds of people doing bad things. Why do I have to behave? Why me? I don't want to behave. It's easier and it's funnier, quote unquote, when you don't behave. So and then nobody's behaving. Why do I have to behave? But that takes a person also into depression. Always me. Why me? That the Alter Rebbe says something very interesting. When you see other people sinning, other people doing not appropriate things, you don't have to judge them. Don't judge anybody. Because our sages do say, actually, in Pirkei Avos, the ethics of our fathers, don't judge a person until you're in its place. And the idea of the place where a person is, of course, you're not going to be that person, but what does it mean, the place where the person is? Certain situations lead a person to sin. Because he's found in that circumstance, in that situation, that provokes, so to speak, this person to sin. It doesn't mean that this person is not guilty of sinning. Of course, he sinned. He chose to sin. But the idea that Rebbe is sharing is the situation in which this person is found makes him sin. The fact that you're not in that situation doesn't mean that you're really better than that person, because you don't know how you would react in that situation. So don't judge and be humble in front of every single human being in the face of the earth. The face of the earth. Humbleness. That's a very important trait, so to speak, Chassidus talks about. And then the Alter Rebbe says, even if these ideas don't help you, so to speak, to to take out the depression of your heart, like sufferings. I explained to you, says Altrebe, sufferings come from a very high love, shape of love from God towards us. And then the bad thoughts, and then the bad feelings, and then whatever, the humility. If none of this helps you, Daltrebe gives another idea. You should know that your heart, it's hard as a stone. That's why you don't get better with these different ideas Daltrebe shared. This is called in Hebrew timtum aleif, your heart, or timtum amoyach, your heart or your mind are very hard as a stone. Why? Because you indulged yourself too much throughout your whole life into materiality and mundane things, vulgar things, and so on. That's why your heart is so hard as a stone. So what do you have to do in order to improve? You have to, quote unquote, break your heart. What does that mean, to break the heart? It means stop indulging in material things. Break, quote unquote, your body. Why do I say quote unquote, and I'm very strong on that? Because it doesn't mean fast. Fast every single day for 10 hours. It doesn't mean mortifications. Like hit yourself with a whip 10 times a day. No. This is not what Altrebe is talking about. No. Altrebe is talking about controlling your body. What does that mean to control the body? Very simple. You want to eat cake. Oh, it's a kosher cake and I can eat the cake and I love this cake. Okay, you know what? Instead of eating two pieces of cake, eat one. Yeah, but I don't have a problem with diabetes and I don't have a problem with greed, whatever. I'm not fat and I can eat two and I like it. You know what? Teach your body that you're the boss, not him. But I'm used to that. I don't care. Teach your body. By controlling your body and teaching it who is in charge, so to speak, not the body, the soul is in charge. This way you, quote unquote, break your body. And this helps to break the heart, so to speak, in order to be able to feel something, in order to be able to understand, you break your mind, so to speak. Then the Alter Rebbe goes into a very interesting subject that after understanding that the main thing is the soul, and the soul should be in charge of every single part of the body and every single part of the garments and thoughts, speech, and action, and so on, that's a tool to understand, to really understand what it means, the mitzvah of Ahavas Israel, loving your fellow Jew. What is that mitzvah? How can you love another person? Like, the nature of a person is to love themselves. I love myself because I'm me, because I live with me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I appreciate myself and so on. How can I love somebody else, kamoicha, like you love yourself? To the point, interestingly, the Ramban, Nachmanides, writes, in his commentary in the third in Parshas Kedoshim, when this verse appears of loving your fellow Jew like yourself, he says, this is an exaggeration. It's exaggerating. It's impossible. Forget it. Do your best. Do your best, but it's impossible. And the Rambam, Maimonides, how does he explain this mitzvah? Okay, it doesn't really mean to love the other guy. It means to talk good about the guy, to think good about him, to help him whatever you can. It doesn't mean to feel, you know, when your heart beats stronger, that you're feeling something, excited about something. It doesn't really mean that. Altrebe says, no. Wait a second. The Torah, you cannot take it out of the normal, regular, simple translation. Pshat. That's what it's called in Hebrew. Pshat. So when the Torah says you have to love your fellow Jew like you love yourself, that's what it means. How do you do that? In order to do that, you have to focus. You have to, again, as we said before, focus on the spirituality of a person. Focus on the soul of a person, not on the body. The body divides between us. But the soul is a very lofty thing. And there's a level of the soul in which we are all connected. We're all one thing. We're all one part of a big body, so to speak. So that's the way of keeping this mitzvah. Then the Rebbe says, the Alter Rebbe goes into a very long description of loving God and fearing God. And he says, this is exactly what love for God actually means. When a person refines his body, when a person lets the soul, so to speak, come out, and get revealed, that's exactly what it means. That a person is connected to godliness and loves godliness, loves God. That's exactly what it means. And that's exactly the idea of simcha. Simcha sanefesh, the happiness of the soul. Sometimes, as we said before, happens that the body is not so happy. Yeah, it's true. The body is not so happy, either because you don't have money or because you do have money. Whatever the case is, situation is, doesn't really matter. So real happiness means focus on the soul. When the soul is connected to God, when the soul feels love for God, when the soul feels fear for God, that's its happiness. So a person has to be happy that he's connected to God. That's why we actually recite psalms and tehillim and different types of the prayers every single day. They express this idea of Ismach Yisrael Beisav. A person has to be happy with his maker, with God. Every single person can do that. And by having the faith that we actually get connected to God through the fulfillment of the 613 commandments, that faith is the happiness of the person, as if it was just one mitzvah. Your focus in life is you have to connect to God. And you have to, again, have the faith that the mitzvahs do that. With that, you're going to have enthusiasm and livelihood. You're going to enjoy keeping every single mitzvah. If it's just a thing that a person does because it's accustomed to do, because that's what my parents told me, I have to do this and I have to do that, and I have to behave and so on, it's impossible to have enthusiasm in the fulfillment of the mitzvahs. But again, when a person has clear in the mind that this brings happiness to him, brings happiness to God. God is happy because you're doing this, and because you're connected to him. It's like a father waiting for the children to come back from the prison. The children were in the prison, so when they go out, and the father is happy, the children are happy. This is what it means, happiness in Judaism in general. People think sometimes that Hasidim, you know, they dance and they sing and they're playing guitar and they're happy, quote unquote. This is the happiness, and they're smoking, some of them. I don't smoke. I hate it. Some of them, yeah, they're happy. Yeah, I know what that happiness is. No. You're wrong. The real happiness of a chosid is the connection to God. The opportunity to fulfill yourself, to realize yourself, your potential, to be connected to God. As we explained before, the human being, by being included into God, by connecting to him, keeping the mitzvahs and so on, that's your real fulfillment. That you're fulfilling the mission why you came into this world. So that's the real happiness of a person. Then the Alter Rebbe goes into a long, lengthy discussion of the importance of practical mitzvahs, concrete mitzvahs. Because most of the Torah, most of the mitzvahs in the Torah are actually concrete things. You have to put on the mezuzah, you have to put on tefillin, you have to give tzedakah, you have to eat matzah in Pesach. So it's like physical, material things. And a person might think, you know what? I want to be a spiritual guy. I want to be a Jew in my heart. Yeah, I feel such a love for God. Do you do the mitzvahs? No, that's an old thing. That's already, you know, forget it. It's not for today. It's just for the Eretz Yisrael. No. You got it wrong. By practical mitzvahs, what we're doing is not just refining ourselves by connecting to God, but we're refining the world. What does that mean? Every single corner, so to speak, of the world has godliness inside of it. Because God creates the world through his words. That's the whole second part of the Tanya. God creates the world through his word, which means that the word of God is inside the creation, creating it and giving it strength to keep on existing. So when a person uses a material thing in order to serve God, for instance, I'm drinking the water, whatever, in order to be able to give a class and talk to you and so on. So this water has inside of it a spark of godliness. And when I'm using, so to speak, the power, the humidity of the water in order to be able to talk, and talk what? Talk Torah, that's refining the spark of godliness within it and reconnecting that spark with God. Therefore, when we actually use the whole world, that's why God spread out the Jews throughout the whole world. When we use every single corner of the world and we reveal the godliness that is inside of that corner of the world, we're actually refining the world and we're doing of this world the true reason. So I'll explain in a second, the true reason why God created the world. Our sages do ask themselves, why did God create the world? Like, is God missing anything? The answer is no. He doesn't need anything. So why did he create the world? Was he feeling alone? No. He wanted, this is the answer, one of the Midrashim, Midrash Tanhuma brings, very interesting answer. And this answer is brought down in Hasidus in many, many places, constantly. God wanted a dwelling place in this lower world. What does that mean, lower world? It means a world like ours, where his presence is concealed. We don't see him. But God wanted to dwell, to be revealed himself down in this world. But, of course, he can do anything he wants, so he doesn't really need us to do this, but he wanted that there should be human beings in this low world, so low that his presence is concealed, so low that it could be a human being that says, God doesn't exist, I don't see him, he doesn't exist. It could be, yes, sure. But in that place, over there, God wanted to be revealed. But that revelation should come through us keeping the mitzvahs and taking the material things in the world and lifting them up into godliness. That's the reason why God created the world. So by us actually using the world in a good way, in a holy way, and so on, like to keep the mitzvahs, by doing that, we actually refine the whole world. We reconnect all the sparks of godliness to God himself. And that actually brings down the presence of God. But that's only done through practical, concrete, material mitzvahs. I can feel a lot of love for God. I can feel a lot of fear for God. But that has a limit. Love and fear are feelings. And feelings, after all, are like a lofty thing in the realm of the human being. What's the lowest of the lowest in the human being? Action. Concrete world, material world, where again, godliness is completely concealed. There, God wants to dwell. How? Take that world and use it as a mitzvah. For instance, take the matzah, take this bread, whatever, and eat it in Pesach, and that's a mitzvah. You're refining even the wheat of the matzah and so on. Then the Alter Rebbe goes into a very lengthy and complex discussion of what's the spiritual result of each mitzvah, up to which world, whatever mystical world the mitzvahs actually go up, and then it starts from chapter 41 on, an interesting discussion about fear for God and love for God, different types of fear for God and different types of love for God, which in general divide into four levels. There's one level called lower fear for God. In Aramaic, it's irotatoe, the lower way, form, whatever, of fear for God, which actually means, very simple, I fear doing something wrong in front of God. I realize he's watching me, he's listening to me, he knows what I'm thinking, that's just what I'm doing, and I'm fearful of doing something wrong, of saying something wrong, and of thinking something wrong, because he knows my thoughts. And this is a constant feeling that a person has to be constantly conscious of this. God is watching me. That's the lowest level of fear for God. Some people think, erroneously, it's wrong, but some people think that the lowest level of fear for God is fear for punishment. You know what? If you don't behave properly, God is going to punish you and you will suffer a lot. Either in this world or in the world to come, you will see what God is going to do to you. That's not fear for God. That's fear of the punishment. If it would be something else that applies the punishment, so you would fear that thing. But you're not fearing God, so to speak. So when we talk about the lowest level of fear for God, we're talking about fearing doing something wrong in front of him. He is watching us. He is, and so on. That's the lowest level. Then the next level is love, a lower level of love for God. But first comes fear. That's the basics and the root of service to God, fear for God, even the lowest level of fear for God. Then comes love for God. But in a low level, what does that mean, love for God in a low level? When a person loves God because it's good to me, I realize God is giving me so many blessings that I love him. I like him. He does good to me. I have contacts, you know, in shul, you go to synagogue and you talk to what people, to another people, to another person, you make great businesses. So I'm very happy to be a Jew. I'm very happy to be part of this group. Why? Because I get blessings out of this. It's my benefit. That's the lowest level of loving God, where you're actually not so much loving God, because the only reason why you're loving is because you get benefits out of that. That's the lowest level of love for God. Then comes the higher level of loving God, when a person contemplates in the greatness of God. Not that God is good for me. I don't really care about me. I'm just caring about God. Look at the greatness of God. And there are many, many levels into each one of these levels being described. For instance, a person thinks about the universe. How great is the universe? How big it is? And God created all of these. How many stones and minerals are in the world? How many types of plants are in the world? How many types of animals are in the world? And earth animals and air animals and birds and so on. How many different types of human beings are in the world? And the thoughts of each one of them, God is conscious of them. And you can go on and on and on, thinking about the world and grasping to some degree the greatness of God that is creating all of this all the time, constantly creating all of this, and constantly conscious of all of this. That's one way of understanding the greatness of God. Another way of understanding the greatness of God is when a person meditates, contemplates the infinity of God. The previous level is how God gets involved into the world and creates the world and maintains and sustains the world and is conscious of it and so on. It's all related, actually, to the world. It's something we can understand. But there's another level, that God goes way beyond the world. It's infinitely higher than the world, to the point that we cannot understand what it is. But still has a relationship with the world, because it's actually higher than the world. Oh, okay, so we cannot understand this directly. We can understand it indirectly. What is not? It's not in the world, it's not this, and it's not that. It's something higher than that. Those are different levels of loving God. When a person realizes the greatness of God, how he is infinite and so on, then you're going to naturally develop within yourself love for God. And then the Alter Rebbe said the highest level of all this is highest level of fear. So we started lowest level of fear, lower level of love, higher level of love, and now the higher level of fear for God. What does that mean? When a person realizes that you're so small, so insignificant in front of the amazing greatness, infinity of God, this generates inside of you a sense of awe for God, a sense of busha, a sense of I'm ashamed of even taking up space from God's world, in God's world. Who am I? What am I? Nothing. That generates the higher level of fear for God, where a person completely surrenders, so to speak, gives himself completely to godliness, because I realize I'm nothing. These levels that the Rebbe describes very, very, in a very, very clear and long way, so to speak. And at the end of this first part of Tanya, which is called Sefer Shel Beinanim, the book of the intermediate people and so on, at the end, the Alter Rebbe gives an interesting description of how the presence of God used to reside in the temple, in the first temple, in the second temple, strongly in the first temple than in the second, because in the second temple, there were many things that were missing were actually in the first temple, and the second temple, they were not over there. They were missing. They were hidden or whatever. We didn't have them. And therefore, the level of godliness in the second temple was lower than the level of godliness done in the first temple. And that Rebbe gives a whole explanation of that, because he wants to explain that God resides, so to speak, is more easily revealed into our minds. And basically, the temple represented in a mystical way the mind, so to speak, of the world, from where all the energy came out into the whole world, just as the mind controls the whole body, and all the energy of the body goes through or from the mind into the whole rest of the body. This is basically the first part of Tanya, together with many, many concepts of Chassidus.